The following audio is brought to you by Summerside Community Church in London, Ontario. For more information on Summerside, visit us online at www.summersidechurch.ca.
Well, good morning. It was 31 years ago today that we moved to London. Luke and the triplets were 1.5 years old, believe it or not. Just hard to imagine that how long ago that was. You know, a lot has changed in our world in that time. One of the things that has really changed in our world is the use of language. You know, we live in a really confusing world. I mean, not only in, you know, videos, like Faith and I were saying, you know, it's at the point now, you watch a video online, you don't know if it's real or not anymore, right? Everything can be totally fake. You can't trust anything that you see because everything's sort of messed up. But language has done the same thing. Words that used to be, everybody understood what they meant. Now it's like, okay, what do you mean by that? You know, what is that word? How do you define that? Because many people are redefining words to fit their preference or to fit their worldview in some way. One of the words that has been twisted and changed quite a bit is the word love. Now, as Christians, we define love in a certain way because we believe that God is love and love comes from God and He's the one that defines it, right? I mean, that for us is pretty straightforward, but in our world, love means all kinds of different things. And it doesn't mean the same thing that we would say that it means. And at the beginning of this book, when we start in 1 Thessalonians in verse 3, right at the beginning, Paul commends these people for their work produced by faith, their labor prompted by love. So Paul has this sense of understanding of what love is, and he wants them to understand this love, and he praises them for it. Now, I mentioned back then that love, when we think about love from the way the Bible describes it, you can think of it as, my favorite definition, is love is committing myself to the benefit of another so that God's will could be accomplished in their lives. Now, if you want to remember that, just think of John 3:16. John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son that whoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life. So the idea is that God committed himself to our benefit so that his will could be accomplished in our lives. That's the idea of love that we find in the Bible. And that's the way God has loved us. That's the way Jesus has loved us. And that's what he intends for us when he says to us, love one another. Commit yourself to the benefit of another person so that God's will can be accomplished in their lives. That's why Jesus says, love your neighbor. Why? Because you want God's will to be accomplished in your neighbor's life. So love your neighbor. Now, that's very different than what we hear in our world. Because in our world, love for many people is just a physical attraction between two people. And very often without any strings attached. You've probably seen the sign. You see it at whenever there's the protests on the news, they always show a sign. Love is love. It's like, okay, chocolate is chocolate. I mean, it's like, what does that mean? I even went to an authoritative source, Google, to try to find out what do they mean by love is love? And it seems that from what some people express is that what it means is that you are free to love whomever you want, whenever you want, however you want. The idea is that there's no strings attached to love. There are no boundaries to love. I mean, this really is an outflow of, you know, the hippie movement where they talked about free love. You know, love without boundaries. Love however you want. Love that isn't confined by a marriage relationship. And once people adopt that idea, they naturally talk about love as just following your heart, right? You do whatever you desire to do. True love is just being true to yourself and giving of yourself. It's not thinking that you have any kind of boundaries. Don't deny how you really feel. Because anything that is, that you can call love is good, has to be good, right? Because love is love and love is great. And so if you call it love, then it should be fine. But then Tina Turner comes along and says, what's love got to do with it, right? It's like. Now, those of us who are committed to Jesus and we've submitted to his standards because he is a king and he has a kingdom and we have submitted to him as our king, we have become a part of his kingdom, we understand that love is a little bit different. Because where the world says, follow your heart, God says, guard your heart. Right? He says, guard your heart, and not only guard your heart, but also set your heart in a specific direction consistent with the God who created you, the God who redeemed you. You need to set your heart. You need to choose the direction of your heart. You don't just follow your heart because the heart is sinful. Because your natural tendency is to go against God and against his kingdom. And we need to learn to choose to move in the direction that God has called us to move. Now, since we defined love as having boundaries, and the world says love has no boundaries, but God says love does have boundaries. Since we define love in terms of boundaries, the world looks at us and they consider us people who hate. And that's a common thing. If you put boundaries on love and you put restrictions on love the way God does, then you must hate other people because you don't love them. And it shouldn't surprise you if people say that. Don't get bothered by that, because Jesus said, don't be surprised if the world hates you because they hated me. And he was the one who taught love, and yet the world does hate Jesus. And Jesus told us to expect that. Now, last week in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, Luke took us through the first part where Paul clearly says that there are boundaries to love. Okay, and talking about the physical love between a man and a woman in a marriage relationship. That's the boundary that God has set. God doesn't say, do whatever you feel as long as it's love. He says, no. He says, control your body. He says, there are limits. There are restrictions on how true love is expressed. Today we're going to move to the next verses where Paul continues to talk about love, but he applies it in a really different way, in an unexpected way, in a sense. Because he's going to talk about love, how we display our love through our work. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. I invite you to take your Bible and turn there. 1 Thessalonians 4, and we're going to be starting in verse 9. Now, today we're looking at this next section, and Pastor Luke told me that last week he forgot to mention that the beginning of this chapter is a transition point in the whole book. Because if you remember, in the first half of the book we went through, there was a long section where Paul was talking about explaining why he couldn't go back to see them, and sort of talking about how people were confusing why, you know, accusing him of wrong motives, and he's sort of defending himself. Now he gets into specifics, and in chapter 4, verse 1, he says, as for other matters, so it's like, now I want to get into some specific things that I want to address with you. We instructed you on how to live in order to please God. And the whole rest of the book, essentially, is Paul talking about these matters of how we please God. Last week, Luke talked about pleasing God by self-control, by not hurting other people in the way we respond to one another physically, avoiding sexual immorality. He's talked about that in the first part. And now in verse 9, we're going to learn about love and look at how he applies that to work. Let me read through these verses for you, and then we'll sort of work through that. Here's the word of the Lord. Now about your love for one another, we do not need to write to you, for you yourselves have been taught by God to love each other. And in fact, you do love all of God's family throughout Macedonia. Yet we urge you, brothers and sisters, to do so more and more, and to make it your ambition to lead a quiet life. You should mind your own business and work with your hands, just as we told you, so that your daily life may win the respect of outsiders, and so that you will not be dependent on anybody. Now, he begins by reminding them of what they already know, that God expects them to love one another. It's like God, you've been taught by God. You're probably referring to the fact that when he was with them, he would have told them that Jesus gave them a new commandment. The new commandment is that you should love one another. And so they would have heard this commandment. They understood that they were supposed to love one another. It's clearly the way in which we love God. And on an interesting side note, love in verse 9 there, a love for one another, is the word, the Greek word Philadelphia. Sound familiar? The city of brotherly love. The word isn't used too often because usually we have the word agape, which follows a little bit later. The main word for love, which talks about that sacrificial love based on the Old Testament covenant. It's quite a rich one. But here he's saying specifically, I'm talking about your love for one another. He says, this is how you need to love one another. And beginning in verse 10, he gives us four ways in which we will please God by loving one another. In fact, he essentially says, this is how you will live out love. Okay, so these are four ways in which you're going to live out love. The first way is in verse 10, where he said, you do love all of God's family through Macedonia, yet we urge you to do so more and more. He's saying, I want you to keep your love growing. That's the first thing he says. Keep your love growing. He's repeating what he said in chapter 3. In chapter 3, verse 12, he says, may the Lord make your love increase and overflow for each other and for everyone else, just as ours does for you. This is one of those things that, as Christians, it's easy for us to sort of look at our lives and look back at our lives and where we were and where we are now and say, wow, I've made a lot of progress. I mean, you should have seen me, the kind of person I was before. Or maybe if you were like me and you became a follower of Christ when you were a little kid, it's like you've been doing this all your life, right? It's like, it's not like I lived a life of sin and debauchery and then got saved at age 8. You know, it's like I didn't have a lot of opportunities to sin a lot. You know, it's like I've sinned more after being a Christian than I did before. But it's easier for us to look at our lives and say, yeah, I used to be a miserable person, but now I'm loving, you know, and I've been doing that for years. But Paul doesn't say, it's like, are you better than what you were before? He's saying, is your love growing? Is it increasing? Is there a sense of overflowing? So the question is, has your love been increasing and overflowing in the last year? Or is it, yeah, about the same as what it's always been? It's been okay. Not too bad. No, Paul says, no, I want it to be increasing and overflowing. Now, these people have only been, you know, these are young Christians, right? Probably less than a year that they have come to faith in Christ. And Paul says, you guys are growing in your love. Your love, I'm impressed with how much you're loving others. I want to see that grow even more. So each of us, we need to challenge ourselves. And it's easy for Christians to get stuck and get satisfied with the progress that we've made rather than saying, no, God wants me to. The standard for love is up here and I'm still way down here and I've got a long way to go and I need to keep growing and changing. Keep growing. And the way you do it is growing in your understanding of how much God has loved you. You don't just grit your teeth and say, I'm going to try harder. It's like, no, God, I need to understand your love better so that love just overflows to others. So that it grows, so that the infinite love of God, I begin experiencing it more and more and it begins I begin demonstrating that in towards other people. Is your love growing? Let's listen to Paul's challenge to keep it growing. Now, where does Paul expect it to show up? He expects it to show up in the way they work. Now, I don't think any of you have that in your job description at work, do you? It's like, okay, well for pastoral staff, it's sort of expected that you're going to do that. You know, you're going to love other people, right? It's part of the job. But I don't think any job description says, okay, one of the things you need to do is you need to love other people. It's like the world doesn't think that way. They just want you to get your job done. But Paul here is talking about how this shows up. In the rest of the statements, it talks about how it's going to show up in your lives and specifically relating to work. And he begins with another surprising statement in verse 11. Make it your ambition to lead a quiet life. This is something that should be your goal. You should be striving. You should be working hard at leading a quiet life. It's almost like a contradiction. It's almost the opposite of what our world says. Our world says, succeed, move ahead, you've got to be the best, you've got to be the biggest, and you have got to have the greatest. Paul says, make it your ambition. Lead a quiet life. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't succeed at work and that you shouldn't be doing well, but Paul's saying lead a quiet life. And it's an interesting word, because the word quiet has the idea, the word itself has the idea of rest. And so I would say that what he's calling us to do is to make quiet and rest a priority. And when you think about this statement in light of the Thessalonian believers, what was happening in Thessalonica, these Christians had suffered a lot. They were facing persecution. Even when Paul was there, right? Paul had to leave early because of the persecution. The Jews were upset. The Romans, the Greeks were upset because they weren't worshiping the gods. They weren't worshiping Nero. They weren't worshiping the ruler, the governor. And so these people, Paul, it's like, on the one hand, Paul is saying, you know what? You don't make things more difficult for you than you need to. He says, do your job, live a quiet life. Don't make things worse than they have to be. We tend to think of this in terms of applying to people in China or Iran or some of these countries where Christianity is illegal and they have to live underground. And we think, yeah, for them, that's, you know, they shouldn't try to stir up problems just to stir up problems. But this applies to us too. In fact, in 1 Timothy 2, verse 2, Paul says, pray for kings and all those in authority that we may live peaceful and quiet lives. The same word is being used here. Peaceful and quiet lives in all godliness and holiness. So there's that sense that you don't need to just, don't be a pain of a Christian. You know what I mean? Don't be somebody who's always just stirring up problems and judging other people. It usually shows up, you're judging other people. I've worked in, years ago before I went into ministry, I was working at the dairy here in town, and I worked at Westinghouse in Hamilton, and in a factory setting. You know, it's a rough place. And sometimes you find out, oh, that person's a Christian. Man, they're just a real pain. It's like, Paul says, no, don't do that. Live a quiet life. Like, now, it doesn't mean you don't witness. Be a witness. But I mean, if you're a cashier, you don't stop and try to, you know, stop everybody and say, hey, have you heard that God loves you and Jesus has a plan for your life? It's like, live a quiet life. Be an example of what it means to be a believer. And we're going to talk about how this impacts other people. But live a quiet life. But also with the idea of rest, the word clearly has the idea of rest in it. And in North America, we probably need to hear that more than the idea of not being a pain. Because we live in this culture that says you need to move ahead, and whatever the cost, you just need to make it happen. Now, there are times when you have to work long hours. There's no question about that. I mean, in my job, it's like that too, right? There are days where, farmers, before the rain comes, you may have to work 14-hour day. That happens. But if you're doing that day after day after day and you're not taking time to rest, you're not going to love people very well. You're not going to love your family. You're not going to love your neighbor very well. God intends for us to experience true rest. He designed us to work, but He also commands us to rest. That's why we have holidays, and Thanksgiving is a great time to take a day to rest. And sometimes we have to stop and think and say, am I working long hours just because I'm thinking that maybe I'm going to get something that's going to make my life full? Is it because I'm striving for something? Or am I doing it with the proper motives? What's my motivation? There's so many stories of people that said, I'm giving my life to make as much as I can for my family. And then a couple years later, their family's falling apart because of long hours, because of problems that come from that. We need to be careful. We need to listen to what Paul says. Make quiet and rest a priority. Now, the next two statements that he gives us in verse 11 are an expansion of this idea. In fact, in the NIV, there's a colon after living a quiet life. And then it's because that's the way they're translating. Other translations will treat these as four different things. But they seem to be expand on what it means to live a quiet life. And the next thing Paul says is to mind your own business. Now, in our day, we say that to somebody and it's usually a negative thing. God, go mind your own business. So we treat that as a real negative, you know, a slam against somebody. Back in those days, that's not the way it's intended here in the original. Paul here is asking them to busy themselves with their own work and not to just be meddling in other people or interfering with other people or depending on other people, thinking that other people are going to meet my needs so I don't have to work. Don't be focused on what everyone else is doing. Do your own job. He says, mind your own business. Make sure you are doing what God has called you to do. And this appears to be an ongoing problem in the church, because in the next letter, in 2 Thessalonians that Paul writes to these people, in 2 Thessalonians 3, 10 through 12, listen to what he says. For even when we were with you, we gave you this rule: if a man will not work, he shall not eat. We hear that some among you are idle. They're not busy, they're busy bodies. Such people we command and urge in the Lord Jesus Christ to settle down and earn the bread they eat. Now, he's not saying you live in your own little corner in isolation from everyone else. He's not saying that. But he's saying don't be meddling in everyone else's business when God has given you a job to do and you need to do that. And don't live dependent on other people. And that it goes along with the next statement that he makes in verse 12. Work with your hands. And I would say that the emphasis here is to work hard. You live a quiet life, but you work hard. Now, it's hard to know the motivation behind what Paul says here, because it's possible that because Paul says so much in this book about the return of Christ, that Christ is coming back, that some scholars think that what was happening was that some Christians were thinking, hey, Jesus is coming back, I can quit my job and just sit back and wait till it happens. And Paul says, no, you need to work hard. You need to work with your hands. Now, it doesn't mean if you don't work with your hands and you work at a desk that that's a problem. No, it just means do work. Don't hesitate to do manual labor. Another possibility is that some people in the church were mooching off of others, you know, we're taking advantage of others. We're sort of depending on the generosity of others, because we know that in the early church, there was no, at least in Acts tells us that there was no need, because everybody, the needs were met because they shared what they had. And some people may have been saying, hey, I'm going to let the church take care of me. I don't want to work. I'd rather just sit around and play. No, you didn't play video games, but they had to play something, right? I just want to do my hobby or whatever. So Paul is just challenging them that you need to work hard. Now, in saying that, there are many of you that can't work, okay, because of illness or because of physical reasons, or maybe you're aging and it's getting more difficult. You're retired, and we're fortunate to live in a country that has a good social program compared to many places in the world. Don't feel guilty that you can't work, okay? If you have limitations that God has placed on your life, you accept those limitations. But if you can work, then Paul says you work. You work. Don't depend on others. Now, we care about others, and we have a caring fund to meet the needs of people that need it. Now, because we have such a great social system, that a lot of times that caring fund gets used for counseling. And if you have a need of a good Christian counselor, we want to help you to get in somewhere, and we want to help subsidize that so that you can get the help that you need, because we know that the government isn't going to provide that. They may provide some counseling, but it may not be what you really need. So we get that. So don't feel guilty. Don't think that I'm trying to give you a hard time if you're not working and you retired. So Paul instructs us to keep our love growing, to make quiet and rest a priority, to mind our own business, and to work hard. Now, what are the results that are going to come from that? That shows up in verse 12. Verse 12 says, so that, okay, do these things so that your daily life may do two things. One, it's going to win the respect of others. And two, so that you will not be dependent on anybody. Let's look at those two. First of all, you will be respected. One of the first things that you can do to be a good witness for Christ, to please God, is to work hard. If you have your own business, then provide your service, provide a good service at a fair price. That's being a good witness. If you have a boss, you work your best. You do the best you can so that your boss looks good because you're helping him look good because you're doing the best you can. He may be a jerk. That's okay. You do the best you can. It's not about, don't meddle with his business. You do your own business. You do what God has called you to do. And God has called you to work hard, to work in such a way that the world will say, I respect that guy. It's great when people hear, you know, maybe an employee says, you know, I'm looking for some Christians to hire because I know they're going to be good workers, especially when they're not believers. It's great when that happens. Now, unfortunately, it goes the other way too, where some people say, I'm never going to hire a Christian again because you know what. But let's make sure that we're demonstrating through our lives that we're a part of a different kingdom, that we submit to Christ as our King, and He calls us to work hard, to use the gifts and abilities He's given to us, to serve others, outsiders will see that. But it not only impacts outsiders. The second statement he says, you will be contributing. You won't be mooching off of others. You won't be taking advantage of others. You will be contributing to what's happening because God intends the church to be a community, a family, a body where everybody contributes. That's why we don't hesitate to challenge people to say, you need to be serving. You need to be giving. You need to be using your time and energy to contribute as part of the family, as part of the body. And if you aren't, let me challenge you to step up and do it. Because that's what it means to be a community. That's what God has called us to do. So the question is your love growing? That's the first step. Is your love growing? Are you seeing progress? If you asked your spouse, would your spouse or your kids say, oh yeah, man, they've really been growing I really appreciate them. It's been great to be around them because I feel loved. So is your love growing? Are you making quiet and rest a priority? Are you taking time off when you need to take time off? Is your love showing up in your work by the way you work? Are you working hard to demonstrate to the world around you that you submit to a higher authority, somebody that asks you to work hard as an expression of love to others, of love towards your boss because you are submitting to him just as you submit to Christ? You know, the world likes to complain about Christians, but when we demonstrate love, they may still not like us, but they will at least see God's love working through us. Paul challenges us to live a life of love, growing love, and let it show up in the way that we work.